update. So I'd like to just recap and review and sort of stabilize what we were talking about before. If you recall, we were talking about the process of taking on powerfully and handling sales resistance and objections, correct? Okay. We identified recreating some new patterns. What's the word, please? Thank you. Some new patterns and responses and associations to dealing with sales resistance and how you respond in that split-second instant when someone hands you a rejection or looks to stop you, whatever the case may be, how you respond in that moment. And the point is that we've been conditioned for who knows how long to associate fear, pain, inconvenience, you know, a lot of negative emotions to the process of dealing with sales resistance and people saying the word no. And we began to recreate some new neural associations where in your body, emotionally, physically, when someone attempts to stop you or shoot you down, whatever the case may be, that you can respond differently on a gut level, on a gut base impact level. Does that make sense, folks? Excellent. So I first want to just open up the floor and ask if there are any questions about anything we covered during the first half, whether it was about the approach, the mindset, the material, about integrating that, practicing that. Does anyone have any questions with that, about that? Okay. Yes, sir. And let's get a mic over. Excellent.
Capital Mortgage Banking.
Let's give it up for Mike. Excellent. Thank you.
You know, you mentioned that when somebody is rejecting us, we should say awesome and do the rest and all this stuff. Do you honestly feel a positive thing can come out of it to make the sale? Or it just makes you feel better?
Well, hold on a sec. Hold on. Stay standing. Well, when you ask that question, do you feel that perhaps it would not have an impact when you're having a conversation with someone in that moment?
Well, it's going to have a positive impact for myself. But
okay.
Do you think I'm wasting my time to continue the conversation if they are telling us an absolute no?
Okay, so what I'm hearing is, what you're asking me is, if someone is saying no to me and they're handing me direct resistance or rejection, do I think that responding to that rejection and persisting in the face of that rejection, do I think that's basically pointless?
Correct.
Or senseless?
Correct.
Okay. So does everybody understand the question? Okay. Sir? No, keep your mic. Mike.
Okay, Mike. Mike. Okay.
How do I do it? When you look at that part of the conversation, are you feeling, has your experience been that when someone says no, that it means no and that's it, that's all there is to it?
I feel like when someone says no, I'm just wasting time on them. And if I spend the time on somebody else, I might be able to make that sale instead.
Okay. If someone says no, why do you automatically feel that you're wasting time on them?
Throughout the experiences that I've had with the no's that I've got.
Okay. Have you ever had the experience where someone said no, but you challenged their opinion? Or you challenge their point of view, and either through your persistence or your skills as a communicator, you're able to have them make a shift in their opinion or in the way they were looking at things?
Yes. And the possibility or the percentage is so small that I have come up with the conclusion that maybe I should have stopped it right in the beginning and jump up to another customer.
Okay. Well, ultimately, you obviously need to do what works for you in your business, and you're already successful at it. So if not challenging anyone when they say no, mm-hmm. you know, if not challenging them is what you feel works for you and you feel is going to make your life easier, then obviously I encourage you to go with what works. And understanding that, I will tell you that it's been my experience. And in addition, by the way, once again, the approach we take in creating this methodology is the approach of modeling, correct? Modeling. So we've gone out and modeled people who are really in the top 1% of what they do. Top 1% of sales professionals, entrepreneurs, communicators in various different industries. And we have found one of the things that separates the people who are really the best of the best at what they do is that they will very often not be stopped by a no. That they'll challenge it. They won't take it at face value. And I would challenge you, Mike, to at least take that on as a challenge.
Okay.
And look a bit deeper into that and see if you can create something from seemingly nothing in the conversation.
Right.
Challenge your own belief on that, which is something we're going to be talking about in more detail in a little while. But does no necessarily mean no? And I can tell you that some of my best clients and some of the best relationships I've had, especially on a professional level, have been after the initial reaction or the initial response was no. They were convinced, they were not interested in hearing it or moving forward, but after we got into a dialogue and I could enroll them powerfully into another possibility, there was actually a shift in their opinion and a shift in the way that they were looking at things. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, folks?
Yes.
Yeah. And as well, I also encourage you to take it on as a challenge that's fun. See, one of the really empowering aspects of being an effective enroller, an effective communicator, is not just saying to yourself, well, am I going to get the deal? Or I'm going to close this guy so I can get the deal and make some money. I mean, yeah, granted, money is a beautiful thing. Generate as many transactions and make as much money as you humanly can. What I'm also saying is one of the things that distinguishes the most successful communicators and the most successful sales professionals is they enjoy the challenge of having to deal with the no, of just to see if they can I turn this person around?
Right.
Can I get them to see things differently? And would you agree that, well, this is a generalization, how many of you would agree that some of the greatest breakthroughs you've had, perhaps some of the greatest distinctions you've made in your life have been when you were dead certain on a certain opinion or on a certain perspective, but someone gave you the opportunity to reevaluate and have a shift in opinion, and some of the greatest breakthroughs you had were when someone had you actually change your mind about something or have a shift in opinion.
It's true.
Is that pretty accurate, folks? Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay, let's give him a hand. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, sir. Please. Let's give it up for Paul.
Thank you. Excellent. Your concepts are brilliant. I'm trying to internalize it for my own personality. I'm a focused, sometimes stubborn individual. Now, okay. When I hear no, personally, as Mike indicated, I'm moving on because my first reaction is, okay, I'm just one step closer to the person that's going to say yes. So okay. I'm moving on. That's keeping my own self-worth, I suppose. Mm. So for a person who's focused, who wants to implement what you just indicated, how to take a no and turn it into a yes, for me it's a completely different mindset. Mm-hmm. Because I'm, as Mike indicated, I'm not about wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about making the next sale. And in that, the question being, because I always wanted to serve, and it's my privilege to serve someone, I want to serve someone who's willing to take the service, not wasting the time with someone who don't believe that they need the service.
Okay.
So how do I take that no, the same concept for a focused, bullheaded, driven person as myself, take that no and make it a yes?
So I'm hearing a few things in this question. The first is you're letting me know that you're the kind of person that generally I don't want to have to deal with it. Someone says no, I don't have to deal with it, I want to move on.
Correct.
Okay. So regarding that, I offer you the same feedback that I just gave Mike. By the way, how many of you, by show of hands, are open to considering new possibilities and new approaches in the way that you do things? Yeah. And I understand that you may have a certain way of doing things, you may have certain habits or patterns that you've done for years. But would you agree that if you're committed to getting to the next level and stepping up, and creating some additional results in your life, creating some better results. Notice how it kept timing me, like every time I would stop speaking, it would ring right in that pause. But if you're going to step up and stretch your what?
Comfort zone.
Stretch your comfort zone, then I encourage you to be open to taking on some new approaches. Very, very quickly, and this is a bit off the topic, but it's really important. And it's, when I say it's off the topic, it's all part of this topic, but just not a part of my agenda. And today's not about my agenda. Today's about who?
You.
Excellent. Three areas of knowing. And I did not come up with this, but this was very profound when I first heard it. Okay, let's say this is the total body of knowledge in the universe, okay? Everything you know. Everything that's known. There's one sliver, and this refers to everything you personally know.
Okay.
Okay? What you're aware of, the skills you have, the concepts you're in touch with. The next sliver here is what you don't know. For example, I know I don't speak French. So I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm not a brain surgeon. Okay? But I know that I don't know it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Who can tell me what this entire other level of knowledge refers to?
Possibilities.
Possibilities, but it refers to what you don't know that you don't know.
Okay.
Okay? Once again, I've not come up with these concepts, but I want you to think about this area here. Okay? Think about that. What could you possibly create in your business that you haven't created because you get stopped at no? How many people have you spoken to in the past that could be perfect clients whose lives you could change? You could offer them a new way of doing things, new way of looking at things, but you deprive them of that opportunity simply by not challenging their no and going more deeply into the conversation. Does that make sense, folks?
Yes.
So ultimately, what this boils down to is if you're open to making a shift in how you approach things and exploring this area here and seeing if there's something you can create. And I will tell you, as far as how you make that happen, the first step is stepping into that dialogue and just challenging their opinion in a polite, professional, courteous way. And that's why we drill that response. Because you can do it in a way that challenges them, but in a way that does not make them wrong, and in a way that aligns with them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You can do it anywhere, with anyone. Excellent. Listen, I understand exactly how you feel, and I think if I'm in your position, if I'm sitting at home, not waiting for a call, someone calls me out of the blue, telling me they're going to be my agent, or they're the fifth person who called me this week saying they want to list my home, whatever the case may be, they're offering me a new proposal on the loan that I'm looking for, I wouldn't be open to hearing it right away. And understanding that, and it's a very valid concern, can I simply ask you a few brief but really important questions? And you simply open the dialogue up to some new possibilities. Does that make sense, folks?
Yeah.
Okay, let's give them a hand. Thank you. Okay. Which is, I just want to share some specific questions you can share with your prospects when engaging them in a dialogue that can enroll them towards what you're looking to create. And once again, get them to consider a new way of looking at things, a new perspective. And these questions are basic, they're not complicated, and I will tell you that if you're not using these tools on a consistent basis, there's a very good chance you're leaving tremendous opportunity on the table when you speak with your prospects and your clients. Does that make sense, folks? Okay. So just simply turn to page 7 in your manual. It's already been written down for you. You don't need to write these down. And by the way, as we said before, please finish this for me. The little things are not a lot. The little things are what? Thank you. And what is the fundamental about fundamentals? There are no new fundamentals. And by the way, you'll find very often that sometimes the truth, whatever that is, or the tools that are going to work for you and serve you, they're not always all that glamorous. It's not always something cutting edge and new. Very often it's a matter of being more clear and reinstating the basic simple principles that are going to work for you and that you can reinforce in your life to get the results. Does that make sense? Does that make sense, folks?
Yeah.
And this reminds me of an interview I once heard with a gentleman named Jun Ri. Has anyone ever heard of this gentleman? This was years ago, but he was the number one grandmaster of Taekwondo in the world. Okay, he was a very, very bad man in a good way. And he had trained tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of students. And he was known as the expert. And during the interview, he had said that, you know, one of the biggest mistakes that most martial arts students make when they come in to train is that they keep on saying, can you show me something new? Show me a new move. Show me a new technique. I want to see something new. When really the essence of getting your black belt is mastering 7 key moves, they call katas, 7 key moves in the discipline. And when you master those 7 moves, you can get your black belt consistently and almost easily. But you had to master those moves. Does that make sense, folks? Yeah, so I encourage you to really master your moves and the principles that we're going to be sharing here today. Is that fair enough? Excellent. So regarding that, looking at the page, let's review these. First approach, critical questions to ask, page 7. Identify the reasons behind the objection. So in other words, you want to get underneath and inside the objection and understand why they feel that way and where they're coming from. So the basic question you can ask is, I know you have reasons for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what they are? So please repeat that with me. I know you have reasons for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what they are? One more time, please. I know you have reasons for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what they are? And you can simply say, do you mind if I ask why you feel that way? You know, what comes up for you around that? But you want to identify the reasons behind. Next, you want to identify the final objection. And what this means is that most objections or concerns people give you are not their ultimate objection. It's not their ultimate concern. People just like to throw things out as a distractor or as a way to maybe put you off. And very often when people are offering you objections, they're not even thinking consciously about what they're doing. Does that make sense, folks? Yeah, so you simply want to identify it as a final objection by asking the question, assuming we could get around this as a concern, would you feel more comfortable moving ahead? And they may not even be verbatim as to what's in the manual, but it's the basic idea of the question. So please repeat that with me now. Assuming for a moment that we're not a concern, okay, which I know right now that it is, would you then feel more comfortable moving ahead? All right, so please repeat that with me. Assuming for a moment that we're not a concern, and I know right now that it is, would you feel more comfortable moving ahead? One more time, please. Assuming for a moment that we're not a concern, and I know right now that it is, would you feel more comfortable moving ahead? Does that make sense, folks? Is everybody with me? How are we doing right now? Yeah? Okay. Sometimes they're with you, but just quietly, you know? I just want to make sure. But see, this question's key because it can save you so much time and energy. And if they say, well, yeah, we could move ahead, then what do? You go in for the close. You answer the objection, then you look to create the transaction. But if they say no, then you want to identify what the core objection is. And you simply ask, well, there must be something else causing you to hesitate. Can I ask you what that is? But identifying the final objection is critical. Next, and this is so powerful, it's so simple, but this is what we call getting real leverage in a conversation. Turn the objection into a question. Turn the objection into a question. You say, understanding you're concerned about ABC or your objection, isn't the real concern here how you can have more of XYZ and that being the benefit? So for example, let's just take residential real estate as one example because we have quite a few agents in the room with us. Now, I know the commission rate is a big concern in this industry. Now, one question you ask is, look, assume, understanding that the commission being charged here is a concern, isn't the real question here, what are you going to net on this transaction? On the case of a seller, for example. Does that make sense, folks? Or assuming for a moment that, you know, understanding that commission is a concern, realizing that, isn't getting this transaction handled within the next 30 days and knowing someone's going to do it professionally who you can trust, isn't that really what's most important here? You shift the focus and you redirect the question. Does that make sense? Okay. Next, check in with your prospect constantly. Don't be afraid to do this. And you will notice that I am doing this constantly throughout the day. When I share an idea or I ask a question, I will check in with you to make sure that you're with me, that it makes sense, that we're connected. I'm not just running through material here. There needs to be a connection and a dialogue. So don't be afraid. See, here's the biggest challenge with that. Most people realize that consciously and logically, but they don't really practice it on a consistent basis because very often they're afraid of what they're going to hear. You know, I just asked you a question that most facilitators and trainers are terrified to ask an audience. I said, is anything not working? Is there something that you're not connecting with? Is someone coming up against something here? Let me know. Check in with your prospect. And the way we have it worded here is, how are you feeling about all this so far? I sense a bit of concern about ABC. Would you mind telling me what you're thinking right now? Or very simply, checking in by saying, does this make sense? Are you with me? So folks, does this make sense? Are you with me?
Yes.
Excellent. And the last question I want to share with you today, and this is what I call the default. What's the word, please?
Default.
Again, twice as loud, please.
Default.
The default question. And I call it a default because you can go to this question at any stage of the process. Let's say you're having the conversation. And by the way, how many of you have ever been in a dialogue in any step of the process, whether it's with a new prospect, with an existing client, anywhere in the process, that somewhere during that conversation, you kind of feel like you're getting a little lost and you're not quite sure where to take the conversation or what you need to do to press push the hot buttons at the time, right? And by the way, it happens to the best of the best. Just at a certain point, you kind of say to yourself, where do I go here? Or how am I going to respond to that? What do I say to that? This is the most amazing default question to ask. What is most important to you regarding blank? Please write that down because that's not in the manual. What is most important to you regarding blank? Now, in traditional sales training, that is considered a qualifying question. What's most important to you in a broker or in an agent, in a financial advisor, whatever the case may be? But it's a great question to go to at any stage of the dialogue. Look, I understand you have some concerns here. Let's take a step back here. And I like to say, you know, let me take my salesman hat off here, et cetera. Forget about everything else. What's most important to you regarding the training needs of your organization? What's most important to you in the loan that you're looking to acquire? What's most important in the property that you're looking to sell or purchase? Let me know what's most important here. And you'll be amazed how much people love to answer that question. By the way, what's everyone's favorite topic on the planet?
Money.
Okay. Right. Usually the two are very strongly connected, money and themselves. But normally our favorite topic to talk about is ourselves. So you'd be amazed by simply asking someone a question of that nature. What is most important to you regarding? What do you really care most about regarding? How often people will answer that question. And an acronym that will help you to remember this is basically the number one radio station on the planet. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? What's that? No, that's a good tactical acronym. So just so those of you, some of you who didn't hear that, what someone said was KISS. It means keep it short and simple. Or in certain regions, certain Netherlands or Brooklyn, it's keep it simple, stupid. Depending on where you're at. But that's a good tactical approach. Yes, sir. Yes. Did everybody hear that? It is WIIFM. And could you say that again? What's in it for me? That's how people relate to just about everything they hear. So when you ask the question, what's most important to you regarding? It's a very powerful question because it opens up dialogue at virtually any stage of the conversation. But here's, in my opinion, what's even most important is if you're not sure where to go and you don't want to lose the rapport and you don't want to lose the chemistry in the conversation, you can ask that question and it will very often bring the conversation right back on track. Is everybody with me?
Yes.
Is this useful?
Yes.
Thank you. And the other embedded point here is in any conversation, especially a sales conversation, any kind of enrolling type of conversation, take the pressure off of yourself and put the heat onto the other person in the conversation. Put the heat onto the other person in the conversation. Challenge them. Where is it written, by the way, that you can't answer a question with a question? Challenge someone. Have them go deeper. Have them look at it a bit closer. No, I'm really concerned about your commission fee. On this, okay, I hear you. I understand you on that. Let's take a step back here. Looking at the bigger picture, what is really most important to you regarding the purchase of your home? What's most important to you regarding the loan you're going to get to secure? Now, is it just looking at the points on a piece of paper or the quality of the product you're getting here? Okay, so what's most important to you? Folks, are these questions valuable?
Yes.
By a show of hands, can we commit to practicing and using these on a consistent basis? Thank you. So before we move on, are there any other questions? Any last questions regarding that? It's fairly straightforward. Okay. So what I'd like to do right now is to step into what I consider to be one of the most important topics you'll ever take a look at in your life. How's that for an introduction? Okay, pretty broad claim. Okay. Well, here's what we're talking about. The driving force of human behavior. The ultimate driving force behind all human behavior. So think about this. What is it that drives human behavior? What is the ultimate driving force behind human behavior? And in looking at this, this is what I'd like you to consider. How many of you would agree that being successful, and by that, ultimately you have your own definition of what success means to you, but how many would agree that creating the kind of results that you want out of life is a rule. The process of doing it, while perhaps not always easy, is really not all that complicated. It's not necessarily that complicated of a process. Generally, it's a process of first being clear on what you want, right? Being able to clearly identify your goals or what's most important to you. Then it's a matter of actually just taking action to achieve those goals, to achieve those outcomes. And while you're in action, noticing what works and what doesn't work, identifying what's effective, what's going to get you the results, and what does not work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then ultimately addressing or adjusting your approach to focus on what works and what's going to serve you, and eliminating or staying away from the actions and behaviors that are not going to give you what you want. Is this true? Is this extremely simple?
Yeah.
This isn't rocket science. So here's my question. Why don't more people do it? Why is the overwhelming majority of the human population not where they want to be? Is there a big chasm there? Simple, not too difficult to figure out, very little execution. So question, what is the what is the ultimate thing, the ultimate force that holds human beings back from going for it more than anything in life? Yes. Well, lack of action is a result of it, but generally it's fear. Correct?
Yeah.
Now, it didn't take you too long to answer that. That was a very quick answer. Because apparently it's fear. But here's the question. Fear of what?
Whatever.
Fear of failure. Fear of the unknown. Fear of rejection. Fear of success. What'd you say, sir? Fear of fear, which is a very valid fear. What was he saying? The only fear we have to fear is fear itself. Yeah, so it's fear. And all the things that are mentioned here generally do register. You know, they're on the list, if you will, of things that people are afraid of. But would you like to know the word that I use that really describes this thing that we're usually afraid of? Pain. Just think about this. Fear of pain. All these things we described, rejection, failure, success, the unknown, fear of fear, whatever. If you really had to group it into a category and a topic, it's pain. Pain on some level. That as a result of doing this or not doing this or what we're afraid of, we're going to experience some kind of painful feeling. Does this make sense, folks? I'm telling you here, and I'm not being dramatic when I say this, that what I'm about to share with you right now is so simple it's profound, and it could actually change your life. It could literally change your life in the way that you operate. And I want you to know, once again, what we're about to talk about today are not concepts that I've come up with. These are very powerful principles that have been around for quite a while. The bottom line is I share it with you because it's powerful and it works. And if you want to have any kind of conversation about behavior modification or making a change in your life, creating new habits, new beliefs, new patterns of behavior, a discussion in that area would be remiss without this topic. Does that make sense, folks? Thank you. So ultimately, I believe that human beings are driven by one of two forces. Either their need to avoid pain or their desire to gain pleasure. These two dual forces are the driving force behind all human behavior. Anything you do in your life to one degree or another is an attempt to avoid pain or to gain pleasure. And I have some news for you. Something that I would have actually denied and disagreed with for so long, because I consider myself to be a generally proactive person. But if there's any one thing our study and analysis of human behavior and potential has shown, is that as an overwhelming rule, human beings will do more to avoid pain than they will to gain pleasure. Now, why is that? Because pain is biological. It's a defense mechanism. It's a mechanism that's been put in your body to protect you. You know, as a child, you don't stick your finger in the fire because it's going to hurt. It physically hurts. Pain generally keeps human beings from doing really stupid things. Does that make sense? But in addition to physical pain, there's also emotional pain. And very often, our body, when experiencing emotional pain, will react the same way that it would if it had a fear of physical pain. And as I say that, the siren goes by, right? Is everybody with me on this? Is anyone not getting this? Okay. So taking a look at this, the obvious question becomes, well, how does this impact my life day to day, and how does this impact my behavior? Is that a pretty relevant question? Okay. I want to give you an example. Let's take a look at procrastination. How many of you in this room have ever, at one point in your life or another, procrastinated? I know. Come on, Mitch. The question here is, who hasn't? Well, here's my question. What is procrastination? It's being immobilized, isn't it? Yes? It's the opposite of taking action. It's having to do something and not following through. It's being gentrified. I call it the silent killer. Because very often it starts off as such a simple, harmless little thing. And before we know it, it is snowballed into this force that seems to be controlling and directing our lives in so many different areas and aspects. And we find ourselves immobilized in a bunch of ways that we didn't even realize. Does this make sense, folks? Yeah. So when you think about procrastination, what really is procrastination? Well, it's actually very simple. When you procrastinate, you associate pain to taking the action that you're supposed to take. You associate more pain to taking that action than not following through or not taking the action. On some level, you associate pain to following through and actually taking that action. So I'll give you an example. Were you one of those people in school that tended to leave your term paper until the last minute? Maybe the week before, or in some cases even the day before, right? Now, why is that? If you knew you had to do it all along, you had weeks or months, why'd you wait to the last minute? Because up until that point, you experienced pain to having to actually do the work, to follow through and get the job done. But then what happened is the night before, you went through what we call threshold or breakpoint, and your mind said, well, not getting the paper done is even more painful. I have to get this done. I have to take the action. And you followed through and you took the action. Does that make sense, folks? Okay, another great example. Taxes. I would call it a phenomenon. It's a human phenomenon. We know what we have to do for taxes. We know the deadline. We know it weeks, months in advance. We have plenty of time to do it. Yet every year, the day before, the lines on the post office are jammed with people that have to send their mail certified to guarantee that they sent it on time. Because they associate pain, this feeling of pain, to having to do the work, to have to figure out their finances, to go through the details. But once again, it gets to a point where it actually reverses on you and you go through breakpoint. It's the experience I described, you know, talking about my career early on, where I was just fed up and sick and tired, and I stepped into a process that continues to this day, where I really began to work with and master the skills I needed to be more effective. But there's an element of pain there. Now, what happens when two pains come up side by side? What will happen in that situation? The stronger pain will win out. Your brain will choose between the two and say, yeah, that's painful, but the other thing is more painful. And have you ever been in a situation where you experience both pain and pleasure to the same thing? I'm not asking for details. As the saying goes, my name is Paul, and that's between y'all. But think about that. Aren't there many things in life that you associate painful experiences or associations to that, but at the same time you experience pleasure at the same time, right? There's a tug of war. What normally happens in that case? Well, very often pleasure will not win. Usually pain will be stronger than pleasure most of the time, and that's a generalization. But what very often happens in those cases is what we call self-sabotage. Or the psychologists call it approach avoidance, where on level you want to create it, you want to make that happen, you want to do that thing, you associate massive pleasure to that, but at the same time, you associate pain to it at the same time. And very often, what you will see are patterns of behavior where someone may go full guns, really work very hard towards an outcome, and get off to a great start, but somewhere along the line, they'll sabotage their progress. They'll arrest their development. And that's where often self-sabotage or inconsistency or not finishing the job occurs. Does that make sense, folks?
Yeah.
Approach avoidance. You're moving towards it, but you're moving away from it at the same time. So I'll give you one other example. Prospecting, canvassing. I'm sure if you asked any sales professional, they will tell you that if you want to be successful in business, you need to prospect and create new business. Yes or yes? That's not rocket science. And especially if you're new in your industry, if you don't do that, your pipeline's going to dry up and you will fall out of the business. So once again, why don't more sales professionals attack this aggressively? Because they associate pain to this thing called rejection. They associate pain to someone saying, no, I'm not interested. Getting shot down. Now, on one level, you may say, well, Mitch, yeah, but if I take the action and get the result, then I'm going to have the pleasure of getting the result. That may be true, but what's more real to you in that moment is the pain, the emotional pain you're going to feel, however you define it, whether it's failure, whether I'm a loser, I've screwed up, I'm no good, whatever the definition you give that is, you are more in tune with the pain you're going to feel when you get rejected. So the key element here, if we're going to take a look at this, is to consider and approach your process in reconditioning. What's that word, please? Thank you. In reconditioning what you associate pain and what you associate pleasure to. To begin a process where we associate massive pleasure to the actions and the beliefs and the patterns that are going to set you up to win and generate the results you want and feel great about yourself on a consistent basis, and associate pain to the actions or lack thereof that will hold you back or stunt your growth or not get you the results you want. So this is critical. To begin to develop what we call your neuro associations, the pain-pleasure principle, which is on page 8. And as I said, the key is to strategically condition what you link pain and what you link pleasure to.